This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hello, everyone. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Kyle, Karen, and Mikhail for this week's episode of Book Hype. Good morning, everyone.
Morning. I like how you put extra emphasis on my name this time.
I was not going to forget you this time, Karen. I was not. I wanted everyone to know you were here today. So, this week's episode of Book Hype, we are going to discuss Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. Ooh, that's a mouthful. By Ransom Riggs. But first, we're going to talk about what we've been reading over the last week. So, Mihail, do you want to start with what you've been reading over the last week?
Yeah. Over the past week, I read The Princess and the Queen by George R. R. Martin. And I actually read that on audiobook. And it was narrated by Ian Glenn, who plays Sir Jorah Mormont on Game of Thrones. And it was really well read and really very interesting. And if you like stories where everyone dies, and I'm not exaggerating, check it out.
Kyle.
Yeah. I saw your tweet and you're like, really? I was like, ooh, that kind of got me excited for it.
Funny because it starts off and like it's told by a maester, by like a professor in this world, and he's like, you know, it was so bloody and so terrible and blah blah blah, and you're like, okay, whatever. He's exaggerating. He's not exaggerating.
So do you have to actually have read the Game of Thrones books before?
I mean, it's helpful to be familiar with the world, definitely, but it takes place like 150 years at least before. So I'm unclear on the exact timing, but they're bigger geeks than I could tell you exactly. But all the characters are like new. It's not, you know, because it's in the past, so nothing's going to be referenced that happened in the present. So it's all, you know, historical, and I mean, it's a little bit more distant and less character based than, you know, A Song of Ice and Fire, the other novellas that Martin writes, but because it is told as a history. But I found it really interesting, and like, I would actually really recommend reading the audiobook. I think people that I've spoken to who read the audiobook have enjoyed it more than just reading it flat, because I think some of the material can be a little dry. Especially if you're not like really interested in the world of Song of Ice and Fire. But I really, you know, as much as I was like driving in my car going like, are you serious, George R. R. Martin? You just killed another one. But I really did enjoy the experience of reading it.
Awesome. I have to go look that up now.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, have you read anything this week?
No, I'm still reading Maze Runner. I'm still reading that because I'm a slow reader. I'm terrible.
Oh my goodness, you. How about you, Karen? Anything new this week?
Miss Peregrine's. I just finished it a few hours ago, so it's nice and fresh in my mind.
Awesome. I just finished a book called Longbourn. It's by Joe Baker, and it's basically Pride and Prejudice, but the downstairs version, so it's literally about the servants that live in Longbourn with the Bennets. So it's got that kind of Downton Abbey vibe with the downstairs aspect of it. So it was really, really cool and really, really well done. And even though it's set in the same framework as Pride and Prejudice, it's completely its own novel. So it's really, really fun if you like reading that time period. And if you like Downton Abbey, the idea of Downton Abbey, it's very similar to that. So it's a great read. I highly suggest it. And so it's like an adult book.
If you've never read Pride and Prejudice and you've never seen a movie, can you still read this book?
Oh, absolutely. Because okay, it's good. Not really about, I mean, it just, because the main character is basically Elizabeth Bennet's maid. Like, she does the laundering and the polishing and all that stuff. So there'll be references to the girls and to the Bennets themselves, but it's not anything that you, like, it's kind of like an inside joke if you've read or seen, you know, read the book or seen the movie, but it's not detrimental to you as a reader if you don't know the information.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it was really fun.
It's so funny to me because, like, the whole thing about Pride and Prejudice is how poor the Bennets are. Like, right?
Yeah.
So,
not that they're poor, they're just, they're not as wealthy as they should be for having so many daughters.
Oh.
A little bit different. They still had servants, just not a whole houseful.
Right.
Per se. Alright, so, let's see. Oh, book buds this week. This is a really good one that Mikhail came up with. So, do you guys read anything, like, specific over the holidays or for the holidays? Like, do you have a tradition of reading a specific book during the holiday season? Karen, do you want to start?
No, I don't. When I was a kid, I used to read the Polar Express with my dad, and we had a little bell to go with it, and so every time, like, the train would come or something, I'd ring the bell, and it was really fun. But I don't do that anymore, which is probably a good thing. But no,
that's super cute.
I just read regular books over the holidays.
Kyle, how about you?
New. Sometimes I like to watch How the Grinch Stole Christmas, but that's not a book. So
it actually started as a book, though, so you could, like,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. So kind of, not really.
Oh my goodness. Michelle, how about you?
No, not really either, but I was kind of more wondering if you guys had time to read over the holidays or if it was just like can't indulge in reading at this point, because I know sometimes, like, I mean, I celebrate Hanukkah, right? And it's 8 nights and a lot of family most of the time, so like there can be like sometimes no time for reading at all. But, yeah, I wouldn't say I read anything specific, but sometimes it is a struggle to actually read anything.
Oh, sorry. I misread that question.
No. Yours is more interesting.
Oopsie. So, Kyle and Karen, do you guys actually get to read over the holiday at all? Anything you like? Is there time for that? Or are you too busy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my family doesn't celebrate the holidays, which I always, like, berate them about every year. So, like, I have all my time on my own every holiday season, so I just, like, read books like normal.
Yeah, like, we don't have, like, huge celebrations. My family is actually pretty small, so the holidays, you know, like, leading up to Christmas and afterwards are just pretty much regular days, and Christmas, like, once the morning's over, it's just a normal day.
Yeah, I actually have a 22-hour train ride going to Seattle on Wednesday, so I'm definitely going to be reading a lot.
See, you should get a lot of things on audiobook for yourself, Kyle. It makes it nice and easy.
This is true.
You can just listen. That's what I usually do. If I'm going on, like, a road trip or on a train, I make sure I have an audiobook. It's easier that way. But anyway.
Kyle, read The Lies of Locke Lamora. I've been telling you to read this book for a million years.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
Have you finished The Lost Years of Merlin yet, though?
No.
Kyle, we're going to make a list of things that you haven't finished, and you're going to have, like, a chart, and you're going to have to finish them in a time frame, and that's going to be it. And we'll give you stickers when you complete your book, okay?
Yay. Okay, I like stickers.
I figured stickers would be a good start.
can they be Hot Men stickers?
I think we could work something out. That should
be
We should have book hype stickers.
Oh, God.
Like little book plates that you put in your book, and it's like, this book belongs to blah, 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 courtesy of book hype.
Oh,
you should totally do that. I mean, nobody even has physical books anymore, but like.
You could stick them on the back of your Kindle.
Yes, exactly. This Kindle belongs to.
Oh, my goodness. Well, for me, over the holiday season, because I'm in school up until, like, the 20th, usually we do stuff at school with the kids. So, like Karen said, we read the Polar Express at school with the younger kids and do some different things with the older kids. But for me, the best part about it being Christmas or the holiday season is that I get a week and a half off after Christmas because it's school break. So I have a whole week and a half where I have nothing to do all day long. It is the most amazing time ever. So I actually get to read a lot then, which makes me super excited. So the life of a teacher isn't half bad most of the time. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. Can I just tell you guys, Audible is one of my favorite things. Like, literally, I've had Audible, an Audible subscription for years, because you get this package and you get a credit every month. And so the credit then turns into one audiobook of your choosing, and you can use it whenever you want. You don't lose your credits. So I have tons of audiobooks, but I also have a bunch of credits saved up. So if things are coming out that I want, I can easily buy them. And I use Audible in my classroom, and it is fantastic because it helps my students that can't necessarily read a book on their own and understand it. If they can hear it, it's really super helpful. And like I told Kyle earlier, having audiobooks on huge trips is amazing because you can play them like in my car if I'm driving someplace far. I just plug in my iPod, play it through my car stereo, and I'm all set. I can listen to a book for hours, and I can actually get reading done while I'm driving. So I'm making very good use of my time. So I really enjoy Audible. Like, I've had it for a really long time, so I definitely suggest. It'd be a great holiday present, too, to give someone a subscription to Audible, because it's just a great service for people who like to read or people who like to listen to books.
Can you gift Audible credits?
If you want to give the gift of Audible, you can actually give it as a subscription for so many months. So that there's a 3 month, a 6 month, and a 12 month subscription that you can give as a gift. So those are easily available to give right on the Audible page under Gift Center. So if you're interested in giving audible.com as a gift, just check out their Gift Center section. And also for a free book of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. That's audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Okay, so we're going to get started with our discussion for Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. And we're going to start off first and foremost with, did we like it? Because that's always, you know, a good question to have answered. So, Kyle, let's start with you. Did you like the book?
So, actually, no, I loved this. I love this book. I got it via hardcover when I got it at Barnes & Noble. And I saw it, and I just saw, like, a picture of a creepy child on the front. I was like, ooh, this looks cool. And so I actually have the hardcover somewhere in my library.
So do you suggest buying it?
Oh, right. Sorry.
I'm
sorry. I suggest buying it because it's a really cool book and it has a whole bunch of really cool pictures. And I don't know if the Kindle version has pictures. I don't know if Karen, did you do the Kindle or did you do the actual book?
No, I have the paperback.
Yeah. So like, I don't know if the Kindle has the pictures on it. I would assume so, but I would definitely suggest buying the book because it's just so much fun to flip through the pages and look at the pictures. And, like, when they mention a character, you can actually go back and, like, look at the picture again and just kind of, like, imagine them if, like, you've forgotten who they are or something. It's pretty cool.
Okay, Karen, how did you like it? Because you're fresh off of reading it, so you have the most recent perspective, I think.
Yeah, I did like it. I don't think I'm in love with it. I think the whole idea of the story was really, really interesting and really unique, but I feel like it kind of switched from, like, the beginning, which was really intriguing and really creepy and scary and really pulled me in, and then the middle part kind of fell off for me, and it was this great mystery, but I feel like it just moved kind of slow, and then the ending was really exciting, and that's when all the action happened, so I'm kind of torn between suggesting it to buy and suggesting it to borrow, because I feel like some people are going to be really into it and other people are going to think, wow, this book just kind of drags. But I will say that the pictures definitely do help and they're really cool and it does make for, you know, kind of solidifying the characters in your head and stuff like that. I think it's a really unique aspect of the book.
Awesome. And Michal, what do you think?
You know, I would say, you know, you can get it in paperback now, so I would recommend either buying or borrowing it. I think it's one of those YA books that has kind of become like a, well, you should read this because this is kind of what people are talking about. I'm frankly not really in love with the book. I think, like Karen, it didn't really deliver on a lot of its promise, but it's not a bad read or anything. Yeah, I mean, so it's definitely worth checking out, but don't pay full price for it. Or okay. Do, but don't blame me.
So for me, I thought the book was really interesting, and I thought it had a lot to offer because it integrates the pictures with the storyline, which isn't something we see a ton of these days. I mean, we see it more in middle grade books, but I don't think we see it a lot in YA. So I thought it was a really cool concept that he had, even though, like, this book was originally meant to be a children's book, believe it or not. It was meant to be some sort of picture book that used those photographs, but he switched it up and put it together with a narrative and made it the book that it is today, which is a clearly hugely successful book. So I mean, I liked aspects of it, like you guys said. I think there were parts that were rough patches, but a lot of it I really enjoyed. I did teach this book to my students for lots of reasons, primarily because sometimes my students don't like literature in general, so you have to find something quirky and fun and different, and this works. This fits that bill, and because it has an art value to it with the photographs and stuff, they really enjoyed that aspect. And so you guys know, the audio version does come with the pictures. So even if you listen to it, you have a picture file that you can go through and look at the pictures that go with the spots of the story when they talk about pictures.
Oh, so that was really cool
too. Yeah, it's really cool. So you still have, you don't lose anything if you're buying it in a different format other than, you know, hardback book or you know, book. Which is nice because the pictures are such an essential part of the story. To me, they are just as much the story as the words on the page in the page are. So I liked it. I definitely suggest buying it because it's one of those books that it's cool to have on your shelf to talk about because, again, it looks cool. There are cool things in there. Those photographs are amazing. So that's why I say buy it. And it's a good story. And it sat on the New York Times bestseller list for, like, 2 years straight without being bumped, which just blew my mind. I didn't understand. I'm like, who is still buying this book 2 years after it's been released? I don't get it. But it was kind of a big deal. So let's get into the big discussion now that we know if we liked it or not. What do you guys think of the pictures actually being included in the book? Like, did you like that aspect where the pictures were in the book itself, or did you want them separate, or did you not want them at all? How did you guys feel about that?
I think I really liked it because, like, I think, and I could be wrong here, but I think that prior to reading this book, I may have seen, like, a photo or two previously, just, like, either, like, on the internet or, like, something random. And so, like, these are actual photos, like, real photos that the author has, like, collected from, like, collectors and stuff like that. So I love the fact that they're all, like, real photos and they aren't, like, photos that were photoshopped for the purpose of being in the book. Like, I think there are a couple that were edited so that they're a little different, so that he can use them in the book, but a lot of them are just actual photos that existed before he even had the idea for the book. So I loved it. It added a whole bunch of unique touches to the book, and I think that's why it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I loved the pictures too. I mean, not just looking at them, but just the idea of having them in there. And it made the whole story feel more real because he could be describing these characters and you could flip the page and actually see the person. I mean, obviously, the person in the picture and the character in the story aren't connected, but it kind of gives this more realistic element to the story. And it's just so interesting. And I've never come across something like that before. Like, I've read books that have been illustrated and that sort of thing, but yeah, like you said, Jen, most of them are middle grade, whereas this is a young adult book, and I've just never read anything like that, and I think that's one of the main reasons why the book stands out so much.
Yeah, and even, like, the middle grade ones are, like, actually illustrated. They're drawn pictures, like, right. Hugo Cabret or The Wildwood also is illustrated. They're all hand-drawn. So having these pictures that are really cool, and they're really old. They're, like, legitimately old. And you can tell kind of how they set the illusions in the pictures, which is also really cool. Like, I know my students really liked really looking at the pictures to figure out how they shot the illusion in the picture. You know, so it's just the little things like that that make the book that much more interesting and detailed because it has a little bit more. It's not just about the words on the page. So I thought that was really cool. So let's talk a little bit about the plot of the story because really when we're reading a book, that's what the book is all about. So we meet a family. Jacob is the son. He has a grandfather named Abe and his parents. His parents own, like, the local kind of CVS pharmacy kind of place. And Jacob works there, but Jacob doesn't really want to work there. It's not his thing. So he tries to get fired repetitively. Jacob's kind of a really cool character in the sense that he really just doesn't care. He wants to be a teenage boy, even though his parents are forcing him to do kind of things that he doesn't want to do and doesn't think he needs to do. So the beginning of the story introduces us to Jacob and Abe. And Abe is kind of eccentric. He talks to Jacob about these monsters and about these people he knew, the peculiars. And Jacob just thinks that these are his grandfather's stories. He doesn't necessarily believe the stories. And then, unfortunately, tragedy strikes and Abe is killed. And Jacob kind of witnesses his grandfather's death. And that's kind of the catalyst that sets the rest of the story in motion. So what did you guys think of that first section where we're meeting Jacob and meeting the grandfather, who's very eccentric in a lot of different ways? What did you guys think about that whole kind of section?
I really liked him because he seemed like my kind of guy, like trying to get fired and stuff, which is like almost what I was going to do with my old job. I was just like, no, I hate this place. What can I do to like get fired? And then his, what?
Quit.
Sorry.
I'm just saying you could quit.
Oh.
No.
Oh. Well, I mean, but getting fired is more fun.
Fun? What? Oh, that's a conversation for a different time. Continue.
So, anyway, I really like that, like, aspect of him, like, how he's just like, oh, I don't care, I hate this, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, you know me, I liked it when his grandfather bit it. I thought it was really cool. Not just because, like, I was like, oh, yay, dead character, but, like, the way that, like, he kind of, like, sees what's happening and, like, he sees his father getting attacked and he's, like, has no clue what's going on. And, like, no one believes him and people are just, like, thinking Jacob's crazy. He's like, no, it's like, he got attacked. And so I like that whole thing. I like stories where no one believes the main character until the main character has to prove it himself.
Yeah. I actually agree. I really liked the first part. I thought the voice was very strong and it was very atmospheric. And it does kind of, it definitely like goes down quickly. Like it's not a book that starts on an emotional high note by any means, which sets up the rest of the story in a really interesting way.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the beginning was really strong. I definitely liked Jacob, thought he was an interesting character. I really liked his grandfather. And going into this book, I didn't read the back cover. I didn't know anything about it. And so it was really kind of interesting for me not knowing what exactly was going on, because I wasn't sure if his grandfather was telling the truth or not about the peculiar children. And I mean, at first you're kind of like, okay, yeah, this is the world, this is what's going on, and this guy knows more than most people, and so you want to believe him because the stories are kind of cool, and obviously he's telling his grandson and you want to believe that he's not lying to him. But then as Jacob, you know, he saw the monster and he started telling people and they said he was crazy. And then he went to the doctor and the doctor kind of gave a name to what was going on. I was like, well, wait, did he really see what he saw? And I wasn't sure. And I think that kind of enhanced the story for me, because I wasn't sure if when he went to the island, if he was just going to be finding more about his grandfather and if this was sort of like a true book about like the Nazis and the war and what effects it could have on somebody, or if there was sort of like a fantastical element to it. So I thought it was cool kind of going in blind and not really being sure what was real and what was not.
Yeah, I liked a lot of different things about this book. The thing I thought that was really interesting that he brings up is that Jacob is incredibly bright. And one of Jacob's friends calls him special ed. Because I think a lot of times people miss the fact that if you're incredibly bright, or if you're not bright at all and you need help, that is all considered special education. And so it's kind of joking and funny, but at the same time, it's an interesting concept to bring up, I think, for people to realize. And I kind of like the dynamic between Jacob and his friend, because they were just very, very different people, but at the same time, that friendship worked. So I liked that a lot as well. And I love the grandfather. Even as eccentric and kind of almost crazy as he seemed, I really enjoyed him. And unlike Kyle, I was sad to see him go.
I just knew that it was going to be the catalyst of, like, some awesome adventure. So it was like, you know what? Fine. If, like, he has to die for Jacob to, like, go find awesome adventure, then fine.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Make that up as you go along, buddy.
I mean, right. It's true, but at the same time, I think that the story gives a lot of credence to the horrors that his grandfather has been through. And it's sad that his life ended that way. I mean,
yes.
You know.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Absolutely. So moving forward, the next section of the book is, as you guys said, pointed out, everyone thinks that Jacob is crazy. So he tries to rein it in about talking about this thing that he says killed his grandfather and tries to kind of get back to a normal balance, because there is no balance for him now that he's lost his grandfather. So Jacob's father is very into, I think it's bird watching. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is this very quirky kind of thing to be able to, like, to do. So he's very into bird watching. And because of that, he discovers that there's this rare bird on a Welsh island. Conveniently, it happens to be the same Welsh island that Jacob knows from his grandfather's comments about Miss Peregrine. So Jacob goes, oh, Dad, I want to go with you, and kind of like, it'd be good for me, and convinces his father to take him with him. So now Jacob can explore more into his grandfather's past because he's conveniently in Wales, where he needs to be. Kind of worked out nicely. So we have this whole section where Jacob is in this really awkward town with this pub full of really interesting characters. And he's starting to explore the island in trying to find Miss Peregrine. So what did you guys think about that section?
I thought it was really cool. It was a convenient way to get him onto the Welsh island, I think. And it makes sense. And I actually really liked the fact that that his dad was into bird watching. Because it just kind of goes into the fact of with Miss Peregrine being, like, this bird, like, this old bird. So, like, I love that whole, like...
Yeah, I think everything really connected very well between that and then when the other ornithologist, quote-unquote, comes in and everything sort of makes sense. And it's all really connected, which is cool. I feel like when they first got to the island, I was really excited because I was like, okay, we're finally going to get some answers and everything. And I feel like this is where the book started to slow down. And although, you know, like the mystery was really heightened at this point because he was so close to the answers, I feel like it took so long for him to get those answers that I was starting to not get bored, but I really just wanted to speed through all of the description, all of the, oh, well, I have to go here and talk to this person, then I have to go here and talk to this person, and just kind of get to when he finally meets Miss Peregrine and the other children.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the town in kind of a way, the sort of way that it's like when a book visits a place that it's like, nobody wants to go here. It's all really, it's amusing in a way, like the rudimentary, you know, modern modernity of the town is really interesting. But yeah, I didn't find like the adventures in the town that interesting of themselves.
Yeah, it did seem to slow down there. In a sense, because now we're in a new place and we have to explore it from the beginning and learn, you know, the setting and learn the people, which does kind of put a halt on what was already the forward motion of the book, if you will. So I get what you guys are saying. I definitely see that. So do you guys want to talk a little bit about, like, where he discovers finally the house where his grandfather grew up, and it's abandoned, and then he discovers something completely different. He discovers a time loop where he finds himself back in time, in the time period that his grandfather grew up in. Were you guys prepared for that aspect of it, that there would be a time loop, which is such a unusual thing in a story usually?
No. I was reading this, I was like, wait, what? What? I don't, what? Because when he said that it was abandoned and that everything was like breaking down and the walls and the wallpaper was like peeling and stuff, I was like, wait, I don't get it. And so it took me a little bit until he discovered that time loop. I was like, oh, but I really liked that. It added kind of like a, to me, it kind of added like this, like a Doctor Who type feel where like, he's like, oh, this is kind of cool. He's like an adventure through space and time. That's awesome.
Yeah, I kind of got a Doctor Who vibe too. And I know when he first visited the house and it was abandoned and like falling down, I was really disappointed. I was like, what's going to happen for the rest of the book if no one's here? And yeah, it really took me by surprise that he ended up going through that tunnel and coming out into September 3rd, 1940. And I thought the idea of the time loop was so interesting and so well crafted. And I love the idea that there are these type of things all over the world, and that, I mean, we don't really get this until the end of the book, but that you can basically time travel using these loops. And to me, that's just a really cool twist on the idea of time travel.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys ever, definitely agree. Sorry.
Did you guys ever see the TV show Sliders? Because that's yes. What that reminds me. That's what it reminds me of.
I haven't seen that in so long, but I used to watch it as a kid. It's actually on Netflix. I need to pick it up again.
I may have recently binge-watched a lot. Anyway, but that's what it reminded me of, the time loops. It reminded me of Sliders, where it would take them to all these different dimensions of the same world. So you never really left Earth, but Earth was always different. It was you never knew if you were going to find your home kind of Earth, if that makes sense.
Yeah, which is so crazy to think about, that it's the Earth and it's the right time, but it's not necessarily like the same place.
Exactly. So I thought that was an awesome twist to the book and how it all works out. And let's be said, that leads to so many different things. Like, you could do anything with a story when you have that option. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
You can take them anywhere. So I thought that was super cool.
The thing is, they don't, like, the book doesn't take them anywhere. It's really just like this kind of one way, or I guess two way loop. You know, it wasn't as interesting as I kind of expected it to be. Also, I think I was a little, and this is really just a personal thing. I'm not saying that this is a bad, you know, path for the story to take, but I was a little disappointed when like, it was like, okay, now Jacob's in the 40s and now we know everything. And it was, you know, to me, it was a little like unsatisfying. I kind of wanted the mystery to play out in the present rather than in the past.
I feel like we got a whole bunch of information all at once, like basically when Miss Peregrine sat him down and explained everything to him, and it wasn't really organic, it was just kind of like an info dump, and that was definitely, it was satisfying because I was glad to finally have the answers, but at the same time I was like, well, what's next? And you kind of are left wondering where the story's going to go.
Yeah, which is when it becomes a different story, because it's really not anymore the mystery of, you know, what happened to Abe and, you know, and his past. Now it's like, what's going, you know, like now they kind of have to introduce a new villain into the story, which happens, you know, and I'm still not sure how I feel about it. I don't think it's like, it's not horrible or anything. I just found it less satisfying than I was looking for.
And I think what you were saying about the loop before, about how the fact that they didn't really go anywhere, that's true. But I also think that for this story, they kind of had to do that. And it's actually one of the reasons that I'm really excited about the sequel, which I know we'll talk about later. But it gives the potential of sort of, he's set up how the loops work and everything, and then now we can branch out to more things. And so I feel like for this story, he had to lay that base so that he could continue the story later on, and hopefully things will get more complicated and they'll be traveling a lot more.
Yeah, that's true. I think the whole going back in time was kind of what disturbed me, and I probably wouldn't have liked it if it had been like, oh, and now we can go to all these different worlds like right now. I'm just saying, like, maybe that option didn't excite me as much because I was more invested in the present.
I think I was more interested in not necessarily like the fact that like, oh, like he's back in time, but like the fact that they're like reliving this one day over and over again, which I found to be like so interesting, because like they like there was a reason for that. Like the house was abandoned because like a bomb landed there and like blew it up and destroyed it, and so like Miss Peregrine had to save the kids, and so she created a time loop right before the bomb hit, and then it's just like they're playing that one day all over again, and I love that. Like it's not just like oh look, it's like a time loop and now you're like in 1940, let's go to like, it's like live this year out and stuff. It's like this one day that they can't escape from, and I thought that was like fascinating
and really sad too. Like, I mean, they all kind of took it in stride, and I know a lot of them have been living out that same day for so many years, but can you imagine just going through that same horror every day? And not only like the fact that they almost get bombed and everything that happens, but literally living the same day over and over again and knowing that you're doing that. No wonder some of them started to want to leave and that sort of thing.
It definitely is kind of twisted. It's, yeah.
It's like Groundhog's Day, but nightmarish.
Yeah.
It's my kind of book.
Well, it's like it's their their lives are being saved, but like what kind of lives are they? You know, they can't interact with anybody else. It's like suspended animation, but if they get out of that suspended animation, then they'll turn into 80-year-olds.
So it's kind of like a double-edged sword for them. Either you live in this one day that's like hell, or you age and leave and die, kind of, in a sense. Mm-hmm. Basically what you're telling me. So let's see. It's, you know, it's very happy. Clearly, that's why Kyle loved the book, obviously. Sunshine and roses everywhere. So what do you guys think about the characters? Because this is really a character-driven kind of story. You have Jacob, who is the main character, and then he meets Emma. So what did you guys think of some of the peculiars that he meets?
I think my favorite peculiar was the invisible boy. He was great.
Yeah, I really liked him too. He was funny and so like proper. I loved the way that he talked and all the notes that he took and stuff. He was really cool.
Although like there was this like one problem where like I kept reading it, and I do this sometimes where a character or an author doesn't describe a character first, and I kind of like establish this image of the character in my head, and then when they establish the character, I like have to fight with my mind over like what's going on. And when he introduced Emma, I think it was Emma, I thought it was like a 12-year-old or like 11-year-old girl, and so like when Jacob started like hitting on her, I was like, ew, like what are you doing, dude? And then I have to keep remembering that this is not like that she's like older than that.
Yeah, I actually had the same problem, and especially later when we see the picture of her and Abe, I was like, she looks a lot older than I imagined her to be.
Yeah, okay, so that's good. So that doesn't mean it was just, like, my mind doing that.
No.
Okay, awesome.
What did you guys think of Miss Peregrine, considering this is really about her home for peculiar children?
I liked her. I was kind of expecting her to be a bit more Dumbledore-like, if that makes sense. And she wasn't. She wasn't quite as eccentric as I was kind of imagining her to be in the beginning. But I really liked how much she cared for the children. And I think that she wasn't perfect either. She was willing to keep them locked up for their safety. And even though that was probably the best thing for them, it was kind of not really a good life for them at the same time. And so she has her faults, which I think is important, but you know, just her like being able to turn into a bird and being controlled of the, controlling the time loop, I thought was really cool too. And I liked, all the other ones like her that had bird names and stuff like that. I thought that was cool.
I mean, I think she fits in an interesting place among the other adults in the story, who are all kind of in varying states of disbelief and or manipulation of Jacob, and then she's kind of very honest, right? And then, but then she kind of turns out to have her own agenda as well, and kind of like the other adults, not really giving the children their, well, I guess they are children, like agency and choices, which obviously, you know, they have reasons for. But I think, you know, in spite of the fact that she's like all magical and has, you know, all of, you know, I mean, we don't really know what her and these other women, like where they came from, right? We don't know what they're really about yet, right? They don't tell us in the book.
No, they don't.
Okay. So, you know, at the same time as being magical, there is this kind of mundanity to her and the other women that I thought was kind of interesting.
When we get to the end of the story, we have a little action because Jacob comes across one of the Hollows, which is kind of the evil. It's what killed his grandfather, we find out, and only Jacob can see the Hollows. So he comes across a Hollow and he ends up killing it. And Miss Peregrine had been kidnapped. I forgot to mention that part. So they come back with Miss Peregrine. However, she's stuck in her bird form. She cannot become human again. So at the end of the book, the children are stuck with Miss Peregrine in bird form. Their time loop has been destroyed, so they don't have a time loop to stay in. So they're looking for a time loop. And they know that there are Hollows out there looking for them. That's kind of where we're left.
And don't they only have, like, a limited amount of time until, like, they can find another time loop before they all die? Or, like, do they age normally?
Well, they'd age normally as long as they didn't... Well, I don't even think they could go back to Jacob's world. But if they just left 1940, like, the island, and ventured off to England, which I think is where they're going, they would age normally. It would be like they're literally in the past.
Okay. Yeah, got it.
So they won't rapidly age. It's not like Benjamin Button or anything like that. Like, right. So they'll end up being, it's not like they're going to go from being 10 to being 80. It's going to be a natural progression by year moving forward.
Right.
Got it.
So what did you guys... This is now a World War II story. I really hadn't anticipated that when I started the book.
Yeah, me neither. It was really interesting. I like it, though. I kind of like how it kind of expands. And it's one of those books that definitely goes and changes so much that, like, you either love the way that it, like, kind of goes off in this whole other direction, or, like, you're really upset that you started this book and, like, you're somewhere where you did not expect to be.
I think what bothered me the most was the sequel implication. You know, if this had been a standalone story, that would probably have required something of a different ending, but... If it had been a standalone story, I think I would appreciate it more. But because it's like, oh, and now we're going to continue this story, and it's going to be completely, well, ostensibly completely different than what the first book was. I don't know. It seemed like a lot of my expectations were, because it doesn't seem like a series, you know, when you start it and it's like, okay, great, a standalone YA novel. We never, ever get those. And then it's like, nope, you're going to get a sequel.
Yeah, I kind of agree because...
Kind of become that.
Yeah, because when I started it, I did... I mean, I knew about book two, but I had kind of forgotten about it, and I was imagining this being kind of its own thing. And I think it would have worked really well as a standalone, but at the same time, I think the sequel is a really cool idea, just because even though the story didn't grab a hold of me as much as I thought it would, the world did, and I'm really interested in exploring more of the world and more of the time loops and the characters that we're going to meet in book two. So I'm actually really excited about the sequel.
And that's probably a good time to talk about the sequel. So the synopsis that has been put forth for the sequel, which releases, by the way, on January 14th this year.
Oh, that's the day after my birthday.
It Yay. Is my birthday. It's my birthday. Thank you. We're like back to back. I forgot about that. So it releases on the 14th. And so the description is, in 1940, after the first book ends, Jacob and his new Welsh Island friends flee to London, the peculiar capital of the world. Call, a dangerous madman, is Miss Peregrine's brother and can steal peculiar abilities for himself. The peculiars must fight for survival again.
I so really hate that synopsis.
Yeah, it doesn't give us a whole lot. It just tells us we're going to face this really bad man who happens to be Miss Peregrine's brother.
I feel like they could have saved that for a twist.
Yeah, so unless you learn it up front right away and there's something else that's going to be the twist, do you know what I mean? Because it does seem like they're giving a lot away with who Cal is and what he wants.
But don't we already know that they would be fighting her brothers anyway? Because she says that her brothers are the ones that turn into the monsters because of the experiments that they did.
Oh, yeah, huh. Okay.
Right, but Karen's do we know that he can steal power? But do we know he could steal powers?
Oh, no, that part is, yeah, pretty surprising.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the only thing that I'm kind of like, well, you could have saved that a little bit, maybe.
Also, this is the kind of thing where I wonder if the book is trying to have its cake and eat it, too, which is that, you know, like, and it might not be like this at all, but if you have a book taking place in London in 1940, that was a really dangerous time to live in London. And I feel like it might, like, lose some of that, you know, urgency and, I don't know, like, do a disservice to that time if it's all going to be like, but the real problem is sci-fi, you know? I don't know.
And, I mean, it could very well do that, too, because, like you said, it's an odd time frame to pick. Like, I'm not sure why he picked the setting to be World War II. Like, I think the book does just fine without having that extra added background setting. Yeah, and I hope it doesn't try to explain away what's going on at that time, because that just kind of lessens it for me when people do that. It doesn't make it, like, especially when it's World War II. There are other things that you can, you know, have something over here and then explain it away as sci-fi and it's cool, but this, I don't know, this wouldn't be cool, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of an interesting, like, kind of ribbon through the book of, like, is Jacob's grandfather, you know, is he responding to, you know, World War II and the Holocaust and the horrors that he went through, or is he, you know, responding to these, you know, the Hollows and all of that, that mystery that he lived through? And it, you know, I don't want to say it devalues the real life experience, but I do think that it's something of an easy way out when an author can control the traumas that characters are exposed to in a historical time that real people experience real horrors during. It seems a little bit cheap to me, you know, like, no, you don't have to worry about Nazis, worry about the Hollows.
Yeah, no, I understand. I absolutely understand what you're saying. So, again, it'll be interesting to see how they handle that and what they do with that, considering where they are and what's going on at the time. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, I mean, on the other hand, you know, I do love, you know, sci-fi as a metaphor, and obviously you can use that as a metaphor. It's just, it's tricky.
Okay. So the other thing that's going on with Miss Peregrine's is that it was adapted, or it was optioned to become a film not too, too long ago. And interestingly enough, the person set to direct is Tim Burton. So we are all very familiar with Tim Burton's work. I think we all kind of, you know, have the backstory of the new Willy Wonka he did and all those other crazy things that he's done. You know, so what do you guys think about him being the director? Because this is definitely something that is right up his alley. It's quirky. It's different. It's, you know, got a lot going on. He can really play with it. But is that a good thing for the adaptation?
See, I'm, like, so torn here because, like, so it's, like, it's set to come out on, like, July 31st in, like, 2 years or actually, like, a year and a half, I guess, in 2015. And, like, the person who's writing it wrote X-Men First Class. So, like, it has a good writer behind it. Like, the scriptwriter is going to be talented. But then it's going to have Tim Burton behind it. And I'm like, I don't know about that. Because, like, I just feel like he's going to make Helene – I don't even know her name. What is her name? Helena Bonham Carter. She's going to, I have a feeling she's going to play Miss Peregrine, and I don't want that. Because Tim Burton's like.
Why would you think that?
What?
Well, I was.
Why would you think that?
Because it's Tim Burton, and he's like always hires his wife and Johnny Depp to play a part. And so
I'm
like,
who's Johnny Depp going to be?
Yeah,
that was my question. I was like, who's Johnny Depp going to be? Maybe they'll save him for the second one, and he'll be called the bad guy. But that was my thing. I don't know. Like, Tim Burton is amazing at what he does. Don't get me wrong. I think he is fantastic. But taking something that is already constructed, that already has visuals attached to it, I don't know how he would make that his own without completely kind of washing away what we already know. Because that's just who he is. He is an artist when it comes to movies, and he makes them how he wants to see them. Like, we can all look back at Willy Wonka that he made, and it is it's not like the book. It's not like the original movie.
No.
It is its own crazy beast. So, and that's a book that was written ages and ages and ages ago. So what happens with a contemporary book that everyone knows really well being put out there for him to kind of have at it with? Like, it makes me nervous.
Yeah, I see, the thing is with Tim Burton, I feel like the things that he does well do really well, and the things that sort of fail spectacularly. And so it's kind of cut and dry for me, because I really do love some of the projects that he's been on. I think that they can be incredible. And so it's going to sort of depend on if he can stick to the book and not be too crazy with it, because I think that this world kind of allows a little bit of his personality and the darkness that usually inhabits his films. So I feel like he is a good fit for this. But at the same time, I don't want him to take it too far and sort of make a joke out of it, which is what Willy Wonka felt like to me, because I loved the first movie. It's one of my favorites of all time, and I can't even watch the second one. Like, I watched it once, and I will never watch it again. It just ruined everything. And so I hope that, yeah, he can kind of put his own twist on it, and so it'll feel like a Tim Burton film, but he won't go too far and ruin a book that I think a lot of people really love.
We can only hope, Karen. We can only hope. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do with it and who they cast in it and kind of all of those things, because that always tends to lend to the direction of the film too, depending on who's cast.
Yeah, and I think in terms of Helena Bonham Carter, like, the characters that she usually plays, and I'm not saying she can't play a semi-normal character, but she feels to me a bit too quirky for Miss Peregrine. Like I said before, she didn't really seem that eccentric to me. And so if Helena Bonham Carter ends up playing her, I don't know if that would kind of take that character too far.
Yeah, I agree.
But see, Helena Bonham Carter can play a straight character as well. Like, she doesn't have to be this ridiculously crazy person, because she was the wife in The King's Speech. So that's a completely normal as you can get role. And she was magnificent. It depends on what she's given to work with and what leeway she's given. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah. Well, that's what I'm afraid of, that he's going to tell her, because this is kind of a quirky film and a quirky book, to kind of go in that direction. And I'm not sure that it would really fit. But I agree. I mean, I think she's a fantastic actress. And if she's given the right things to work with, it could turn out really well.
I just imagined Miss Peregrine killing Sirius Black and turning into a bird.
Of course you do. Of course you do. All right. Well, does anyone have anything else for this episode of Buckeye?
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Yes, happy holidays. And we will be back right after the holidays with our end of the year wrap up. That episode is going to be about all of our favorite and not so favorite things in the book world in 2013. It'll include our favorite movie adaptations, books, all kinds of stuff. So we will have an episode after the Christmas.
Awesome.
So yeah, it'll be exciting. So you guys need to get thinking about what were your favorite adaptations, etc., etc. Okay, so thank you guys so much for listening to Book Hype. I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Michal. And yawning.
Yeah, great. All right, goodbye, guys.
Bye. Bye.